Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Chander in Palo Alto.
And hi, this is Arne in Oslo.
You're listening to Valley Nordic, a podcast about business, culture, and technology from Silicon Valley perspective and Nordic perspective. And today the topic is semiconductor crunch. I think if you're in the tech world or watching news for the last 2 months, it's a hot topic. So we thought we discuss the topic from our two perspectives and see what's being covered, what we think of the solutions, and if that means anything for the startup world. How does it sound, Arne?
Sounds good.
Okay. So the structure of the conversation we'll have is, you know, what is the crisis? Why did it happen? And then what are the solutions being proposed for that? Yeah. So before, I think if it's amazing how the whole tech world runs on semiconductor, but they're always behind the scenes. Not many people know, you know, software gets all the glamour and coverage. But, you know, without semiconductor, our daily life won't exist. So maybe we talk a little bit about semiconductors, Arne. How's that?
We can do that. Yeah.
Okay. You want to start off the importance of semiconductors?
Yeah, and I think we should probably not start with overall material science and those sorts of things. But semiconductors is essentially the material that integrated circuits, or better known as chips, are made out of. And chips are the components that are inside any device that does anything digital and sometimes analog. But like in a computer, you have memory, microprocessor, graphics processor, and power management, and a number of supporting functions. And it's essentially those components that make a computer run, or make a smartphone run, or make an audio system run, or a car run. Those are the semiconductor components, or chips, or ICs.
Yeah. And it's both digital and analog. You know, I used to work for National Semiconductor, which was mainly analog. So I want to point out it's not like... power management is all analog. All human computer interaction is on analog. So it's both. You need both for most human facing devices, or where you have the battery powered stuff. But you may have...
I would agree.
And I think the dominance or the pervasiveness of these has been increasing for last 20 years. Now you have chips in your fridge, in your many of them in the cars, which will cover that, in your laptop, in, you know, Bluetooth speakers. Like anytime machines are talking or being managed, you have a chip. And it's called semiconductor because you can control the conducting properties. And it's basically a lot of transistors stuck together. So without this, the electronic world wouldn't exist. Like the spaceships won't exist, or I don't know, not spaceship, but the shuttles. Like it's so dominant in our life today. If semiconductors stop, I think how life today is will stop.
So, you know, things are run by software, and software contains the instructions, but the instructions are run on what the metal that makes the machine go around. Those are metaphorically, it's not going around in reality, but sort of the underlying machinery that the instructions run on is the semiconductors.
Yeah, and for people who are not in the Valley, Silicon Valley is called Silicon Valley because semiconductors are mainly made of silicon. And at one point, there were 65 semiconductors companies in the Bay Area, or what's called Silicon Valley now. That's where the name comes from. And the fabs were here. They were manufactured here, right close to Stanford, Palo Alto.
Yep.
the world has changed since then. So now where the market is, first let me start with the three types of semi companies. One are like Intel, where they design the chips and they also manufacture them. Then you have the other extreme where companies design the chips, but they're manufactured by what's called a foundry, like TSMC. And then third are in the middle, they manufacture some on their own and some they outsource to foundry. And there it would be somebody like NXP. So these are the three types of companies, but the crisis is mainly caused because of the capacity in the foundries is filled. And we'll get to that, but from market perspective, TSMC is the biggest. They own more than 50% of the market in terms of total number of chips manufactured. And they are a Taiwanese company with many foreign investors. They have fabs in China, US, Singapore, many other places. And number two is Samsung, which has, I think, around 20% market share. So that's already 70% of the capacities with these two companies, especially for the newer nodes. And nodes is basically a process technology that's used to manufacture the chips. Is that good overview, Arne, or please add more?
Yeah, so I would say the companies that only design these chips are called fabless companies, and the companies that only produce these chips are called foundries that you mentioned.
Yeah. So the example of fabless would be ARM, which is purely design. Okay, so now let's talk about what's this crisis and why this happened. So you want to start, Arne?
Yeah, I can start. I'll even start to zoom out. You know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. And to me, it feels like I've been placed into sort of a bad dream, like Terminator, where I've been put into this system where I'm about to test out how it is to live under an old communist regime where the government restricts your free movement and even how many people you're allowed to have at home, as well as the scarcity of goods supply. Initially in the pandemic was toilet paper. And in my modern VC world, I have never lacked things so much as this year. And three things I wish more than anything is: one, a vaccine; two, for my Tesla Model Y to be delivered in Europe; and three, for my son to have a PlayStation 5. And none of these three goods are available. And the last one is tightly coupled with this problem, and the middle one is loosely coupled with this problem.
That's really funny. But it's, you know, you're getting the experience of living in, you know, let's say poor countries where people don't always get what they want.
I would agree with that. You know, probably from this story, most people will say I'm a very privileged person asking for a very advanced vaccine, a Tesla Model Y and a PS5, which is not really all that similar to the lack of goods in an old school communist economy, but nevertheless, some of the feeling is there. Well, the PS5 is probably the one thing where, like, your average youth experiences the issue of the global supply of semiconductors, because PS5 is this PlayStation 5, a next generation gaming console. And what's going on in that specific instance is that some of the main components of that gaming console is an AMD processor and an AMD GPU. And these components are produced at TSMC's foundry. And because that's the bottleneck, well, one of the main bottlenecks in the market, there are just not enough of those specific components, which means that youths around the world are queuing up and fighting online to have access to the few PlayStation 5 consoles that are coming through. So that's a very sort of concrete example of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the US, I think how the crisis is getting more coverage around the auto industry. So Ford and GM both had to shut down their factories because they couldn't get these, you know, chips in time when the demand recovered. And similarly, now I think yesterday I read there's chip shortage to manufacture iPad and one other Apple device. So it's pervasive everywhere, but it's most acute in the auto world, where you know, the factories have to be shut down because they don't have the part. I mean, think of the, you know, like a factory has to shut down for a $2 part, which is, you know, part of a $50,000 machine. So the cost of the car may be $50,000, but you can't make it because you're missing a dollar microcontroller. Microcontroller are just smaller chips.
Absolutely. And one other, you know, not very advanced part anymore is a display driver, right? If you have a screen, you have to have a display driver to make things show up on the screen.
Yeah.
And that's today's world, that's a pretty simple component, but that category of component is also in very short supply, which means that goods that have screens are being delayed.
Yeah. So to summarize what the crisis is, because of the pandemic, the demands for electronic items increased more than expected. You know, people are sitting at home, so they're buying more laptops or computers or iPads, PlayStations, because you can't go outside. So there's unexpected demand in terms of electronic devices. On the other hand, the auto industry, because people weren't going out, so they projected that demand will stay low for a year or two. And that has suddenly increased, and the auto industry had canceled their orders for chips. And those orders then went to other devices like electronics or wherever the increased demand was. And now the demand has come up in auto and they want to place the orders again, but then factories are full. There's a long lag time in the semi world when you place an order versus when you actually get the chip shipped. And it's not just the sequencing of how many people are lined up before you, but it's also just the process. The chips are made from what's called a wafer, and converting that wafer to the chip coming out in the other end, it's like at least a 3 months process. And then you have to qualify the parts, because auto industry requires, you know, highly sustainable parts, because you don't want to recall $50,000 item for $2 chip. So all that has to be done. It just takes time. So you can't just push a button and meet the demand if things change. So that's the reason this crisis is happening. Increase in demand on consumer electronics side, and then basically increase in demand on auto side when the industry projected that it won't be there for a while. Is it a good summary?
Yeah, I think that's a good tabloid version of it. But it's quite an interesting, it's quite an interesting dynamic, because, and there are many, many components to this that essentially have made a perfect storm of sort of a industry crashing in slow motion, and not crash to the sense that the industry is down and not working. It's just slowed down significantly and undersupplying. And I think there are some interesting aspects of this. One is that ramping supply of semiconductor is a very slow motion activity. Mm-hmm. It requires very advanced equipment that has like a year delivery time. It requires a lot of capital. So building the most advanced factories now is tens of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And you asked the technology or the nodes get smaller and smaller, and therefore the technology more advanced. It gets more complex, costs more, and takes longer. And that's an underlying trend, right? And you have to fit the dynamic demand into that picture. And what happened when the pandemic hit was essentially that car manufacturers thought that the demand for cars would go down, and they canceled orders, which you correctly pointed out. And that was a misjudgment in itself. It bounced back quickly. But what happened to the automakers was not only that. It was like that they moved from their position in line to the back of the line. In addition to that, demand for computing and all these things, because people were sitting at home, went up. Supply went up rather than down. Demand went up rather than down, while supply is kind of steady. And the fabs also, because canceled orders, starting to repurpose some of the factory lines to the higher performance lines. So actually some capacity was taken out as well. In addition to that, some factories were down for a short period during the pandemic. Customers were stockpiling more because of the pandemic. And some, like Huawei, because of the trade war, started stockpiling because they were afraid of an embargo. So essentially, all things lined up. So all the demand side were ramping up, where the car industry thought it was going down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And finally, there's an underlying demand increase due to AI chips going online. And the same type of chips being used for crypto mining, further increasing supply in something that is short term, a very static supply side.
Yeah. So that's a good segue into why this is happening. So previously I was describing, what it is. So you highlighted some of the reasons why this is happening.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So some of the reasons you mentioned are, I would say the one that's not getting media coverage, it's basically bad decision-making by auto executives. So there you have this model that tells you the supply will be lower and you cancel the order, but you don't think about, okay, it's a $2 part, and for me to get it and store it will cost a few million dollars. But if I don't have it, then it's a $60 billion loss, which I think GM or Ford announced that what they will lose. So it's just bad judgment, and nobody's talking about that in media. The CEOs made wrong decisions. So that's one. Second, the industry has gotten used to just-in-time inventory. And if you don't have it, that means you don't have to have inventory for anything. You can always get things just in time. That reduces your operational cost. But in cases like this, when things, unexpected things happen, then just in time has to be adjusted with some level of inventory. And other things, Arne, you mentioned that caused this are, crypto mining. I read some of the chips that are going into PS5, they are kind of putting firmware on them that if you try to use it for crypto, then it slows down so that people don't get it from black market or I don't know. And so it's that level of paranoia around getting things in terms of gamers' hand. Then the other things contributed, like stockpiling by Huawei or factory shutting down because of pandemic, et cetera. And I think another big why is the long-term nature of just getting the thing manufactured. One thing you pointed out, they're back in line, then there's qualifying parts, then it's just getting these newer machines made. It's, you know, over a year. Let's say TSMC wants to make another factory or fab. They go to ASML, which is, I would say, the biggest or the most advanced semiconductor manufacturing machine making thing. These machines cost like 200 million, more than a, you know, like a jet. And from there, they have to qualify, test, get wafer. The relationships are involved. Like, you have to source the parts. If you don't have the relationships, then that, you know, supply they have is already committed. So it's a very complex ecosystem of relationships, different stakeholders and partners, all that complexity coming together to make this tiny thing that goes in the machine.
So I think to comment on a few of those points, I think the bad decision making is particularly prone, I would say, in the auto industry, and less so in others. Whereas the just-in-time manufacturing is at the root of the problem of like the PS5, because that model works quite well if borders are open, the global flow of goods work, and as a system of supply and demand balance is in place. But these are exactly the things that have not happened under these circumstances.
Yeah.
I think the supply issue of equipment for this industry is an interesting angle to it. Because ultimately, there are a few very important suppliers to this industry. Like you mentioned ASML, which is a Dutch company. Mm-hmm. And they make the most complex equipment and the most critical equipment for the whole process. Mm-hmm. And particularly for the highest end equipment, this is the hardest part. Whereas, like, say, a display driver or something like that we talked about before is more a commodity product. Mm-hmm. And then you have Applied Materials, which is in Santa Clara, and Lam Research, which is in Fremont in California, both of them. These three are the three biggest suppliers.
Yeah.
And so while the production is generally Far East, with maybe the exception of Intel, that's a fully integrated company, the supply industry is Europe, and the equipment for the manufacturing is a US and European game. And this equipment is very, very expensive. So TSMC have just put forward a plan to get out of this problem and invest in their factories over the next 3 years of $100 billion.
Yeah.
Intel, that's a fully integrated company, has said they want to be part of the foundry business as well, and said we are going to invest $20 billion into this. Mm-hmm. And Samsung is also investing. And what's happened, I checked the share prices of Applied Materials and Lam Research and ASML. They're all up 60-70% since October, when this sort of crunch started. So you can sort of see this coming all the way through the value chain. There's actually kind of few companies at each stage in that value chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now that's good segue into the solution. What happens? How are people trying to solve the problem? So that's where it gets really interesting. It combines politics, espionage. It's like a movie. So some of the things you mentioned, well, I think everything you mentioned is very relevant on the dynamics, geopolitics of this. You know, things get manufactured in mainly in Taiwan. But TSMC also has and Samsung than South Korea, but the foundry business, the top half, more than half is TSMC. So now you may remember a few years ago, US banned the US semiconductor companies to supply to Huawei, that basically ruined their handset business. So China has this, you know, drive or objective to become semiconductor independent in X number of years, I forget. And TSMC supplies to Chinese companies too. And US has a relationship with Taiwan and they're dependent on TSMC, but they don't wanna piss off the Chinese customers or the government either. And the Chinese are hiring tons of people from Taiwan to build this capacity of manufacturing, designing chips in country or in-house. So because the CEOs in the US, you know, made bad decisions, and of course they're not gonna take the blame. So they're going to the government. They need sovereignty for these parts, so they're not dependent on high foreign governments, et cetera. And the, as part of the Biden, whatever, infrastructure plan, I think $50 billion is allocated to chip manufacturing in the US. So they want to bring back manufacturing in the US. And Intel, you mentioned, is planning that. We'll see how successful they are. And China, on the other hand, is, you know, building their own capacity so they are not dependent on US companies like Qualcomm, Broadcom, et cetera. Well, Broadcom is technically Singapore, I think. But they moved to being US-based to buy one of the other companies. So it's the mixture of this, you know, geopolitics. Now, like, chip is in the news in government. And there is a summit happening, I think this week or next week, chip summit in DC, where all the chip CEOs are going and they're gonna talk about how to, it's an exercise of getting money, free money from the government, but I'm sure they will have a story around it.
I think just 5 years ago, everybody thought the semiconductor chip industry was, you know, so last century and, you know, it's all software and this is not so interesting anymore. And now it's hot for multiple reasons, because there's a problem to be solved commercially, and, you know, society stops without production of this, and it's geopolitical, as you say. And the interesting part is that, you know, even national security, because military equipment needs, you know, high performance memory and CPUs and GPUs and that sort of thing as well. Yet the cost of being state of the art is enormous, and the skill building it takes years. Mm-hmm. And it's to be successful requires an enormous scale. Yeah. So it's not simply attainable that each country, you know, has their own fab and is world leading, because the scale of, I mean, US and China would be the ones that are closest to having the scale for it, right? But even that would be a challenge, and particularly where today, the skills are in Taiwan.
Yeah.
And yet, without equipment from a Dutch company, they're not in business.
That's a very good point. It's a scale industry. Like, as you mentioned, to be successful in this space, you need scale. It reminds me of, you know, WiMAX versus UMTS debate. WiMAX was, you know, technically a superior technology than UMTS or WCDMA, but they didn't have the scale, so they lost. That was another chip intent. And something else that has changed in the last 20 years, Intel used to be the lead in the whole world in manufacturing the best of the best semiconductors. So when you say the node size, that's basically the lower the number, the more advanced it is, you have packed more capacity in smaller space. And for last,
you know, and achieve high performance as well.
Yeah, lower power, high performance, etc. But last two state-of-the-art things, both 5 nanometer and 7 nanometer, TSMC, they've come from TSMC, not from Intel. And now with Intel as a new CEO, and they want to become a foundry, as you mentioned, Arne, but we'll see. I think they will get a lot of help from the government, but I think culturally to, you know, make things for other people and versus making stuff for yourself, that's a hard transition. We'll see how well they do.
I think this is a very interesting angle to it as well, because since the first PC came about, Intel has been the leader of microprocessors. They had the highest performing microprocessors, and they were sort of driving the development and had the biggest market share. Mm-hmm. And they were fully integrated. And the poor cousin was AMD, right? Cheaper yep. and lower performing processors. Yeah. Cheaper and lower performing and with a smaller market share, right? Mm-hmm. But they were dependent then on production somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And essentially with the scale that TSMC has now, their production capacity and capabilities have just... because of their scale and the work that they put in, have just surpassed Intel. And now it's a competitive advantage to work with a foundry rather than being fully integrated because of this. And that's why AMD, I don't know whether, they're still not the market leader, but they're the highest performing and are giving Intel a proper beating in many markets over the last, I'd say, 1 to 3 years, somewhere like that, because of this development. And also, as Apple have moved off Intel in their Macs, the processors of Apple are better performing than, and the new Macs are better performing than the Intel-based Macs, which is partially to do with design, but mostly to do with the more advanced manufacturing of the foundry of TSMC.
Yeah, there I would say there's slightly nuanced. The architecture is, you know, Intel is x86 and ARM. Is not.
I agree. It's not slightly nuanced, but it's definitely a fact.
Yeah, yeah. Something else I forgot to mention, and I think you briefly touched on it, but I think it's worth elaborating, is why this is happening is the data centers or the cloud. So in the last few years, you know, everything's going to the cloud, and Arne loves that since SaaS is his, I shouldn't say first love, but he loves SaaS. And all that is powered by cloud, an increase in social network, et cetera. So what has happened is these big cloud companies are manufacturing their own chips, designing their own chips. So that has also increased the demand. A new vertical which wasn't there before that is also contributing to the shortage, because there's limited capacity in the factory and now more people want a part of it. That means the wait is longer.
And the more machine learning algorithms are being run in the cloud.
Yeah.
The machine learning algorithms are being run on, graphics processing units or TCUs, which are the AI specific chips, but the machine learning is more computationally intensive than traditional computing, which also drives demand then as that takes off as a trend together with the crypto mining.
Yeah, so Amazon is now designing their own chips. Previously, I think they were using Intel. Google has TPU. Microsoft, I think they're designing their own. I'm not sure. These are the three big cloud players, and now they're doing their own chip design. I was going to mention some. Oh yeah, I think since we're having semiconductor discussion, we should also mention Qualcomm. They are mainly what's called the RF side, how the wireless communication happens. So that's another. They have all the patents. So basically, 5G won't happen without you get patents or chips from Qualcomm. And memory chips is another side. Micron is leader in that. So it's a complex industry. And for any electronic device to come together, you need all of them. So like iPhone, Intel does a lot of their own, but they also have an RF chip, memory chip, you know, multiple microcontrollers, et cetera. So you need multiple types of chips for any complex system, electronic system to work together. System here could be a phone, iPad, laptop, things we use in day-to-day life. Same thing with the car. You need multiple chips inside the car.
Yep. And the share of the car that's chips and the power usage in the car goes up every year.
Yeah. So Arne, what do you think will happen now? So I think so there is the shortage now and people are going to make new factories. Something else to mention to give you the idea of the scale that Arne mentioned. I think TSMC's revenue is around 50 billion, I think. And they're investing like 3 billion in the next 3 years. So let's say 33 billion every year. So like 2/3 of the revenue is going into CapEx. I mean, have you seen that in any other industry? Like more than half the revenue goes to CapEx.
Yeah, it's a staggering amount.
Yeah. So what happens? Like, let's say 3 years from now, how does the world look like in terms of chips?
I think, you know, the models of chips are generally new, but I think you're sort of on the trend, right? Where, you know, there'll be more, you know, process specific, more GPUs, more TCUs, this sort of thing. But I think the trend lines are pointing in the same direction. And I think, the performance will continue, but the CapEx will continue to rise. And there has to be sort of an equilibrium around that. But, you know, I think, you know, even if the government try to readdress this and, you know, say, oh, you know, for national security, we need to be in control of this sort of thing. I don't see that is feasible. Practically. So I think the structure will be somewhat the same. And I still think that TSMC will be a dominating company. I do think there will be a Chinese leader coming up here. But it's a long-term effort.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... what about supply and demand? I think that's a big debate in media. How long will this supply shortage last? And there are wide opinions from 100 days to 3 years. Where is your opinion in that?
I don't have a qualified view on that, but I would put it somewhere next year just for the few data points I have suggests that it's not the short-term thing. And I'm working with some companies who are in the value chain. And they are talking about models for next year, and it's not an easy discussion.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a short term. I think fundamentally supply and demand balances over time, because there's also the effect of price in here, right? Mm-hmm. But because the supply side is so capital intensive and so slow moving, both because it takes a long time to build it and also because, you know, the supply of equipment is not sort of something that changes overnight. The supply side takes a long time to readdress fundamentally. It's more a question of if there are buffers that are not readily seen that can sort of tapped in the short term, as well as if the supply goes down because, you know, when the pandemic is over, people go out more, and, you know, the demand of laptops or something like that drops for the next year or something. I think there could be a demand side readjustment somehow. Mm-hmm. But I think it will balance, but it's not a quick balance because of the nature of the industry in my gut feel view and based on some of the few data points I've seen. But there are analysts who know this better than me. They just don't seem to agree.
Yeah, I think like answer is we don't know, but then we can't have a discussion. So, but these are interesting discussion points that make you think, and that's the idea. So in my experience and view, generally when these kind of supply shortages happen for physical things, generally they're followed by oversupply because of the whiplash effect. It's just, you know, now everybody's going to rush into making chips. The government is involved, a lot of money is coming in, startups are getting funded, a lot of money is going into this. And by the time you have results of that, people would have adjusted somehow their models, et cetera. So then there'll be a period of oversupply. And then, you know, we may have a balance for a while. But the demand for chips is not going away. There'll be more devices that are connected. There'll be more things with semiconductors. It depends who the players are. A lot of the big factors are how successful Intel is in this space, how successful US is in building, you know, in-country capacity. TSMC is planning plants here as well. And if there are new players that emerge with backing from government, and how successful China is in getting independent. So I think, and of course, another big factor is, let's say there's a huge rise in crypto mining, that will also suck up a lot of demand. So there are multiple dynamics in play. We don't know, but these are the factors that will influence the outcome in the next, let's say, 3+ years.
I agree with though, but the reason why I don't, so let's say the US government puts $200 billion in and they're betting on Intel becoming a foundry, right? Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, I would bet that is wasted money. Not because Intel is a terrible company, but TSMC has a scale on foundry that is so big. And Intel has no foundry business today. And even if they have good factories, building a foundry business is something entirely different. You have to build an infrastructure around libraries and variants, right? The spectrum of things Intel can do is not what TSMC can do, right? Yeah. I would think investing to become a competitor of TSMC is best case a 10-15 year burning of money to make happen. And I don't think Intel shareholders and the US government are prepared to burn that much money for 10-15 years. I think a more realistic outcome is that they burn money for 3 years and then they know it's failed and then they have surplus capacity in the US and then they strike a deal with TSMC to take over one of those factories and run their foundry business, but with some sort of export control and control thing under the Norwegian US government so that there is some level of real and some level of perceived national security interests achieved. I don't see how short-term even Intel can compete in something like this.
Yeah, it's not just Intel. Well, I agree with, I think culturally it's a much bigger shift. Let's say they get all the logistics and processes in place. But big company cultures going from being the king to serving others, it's a hard transition. Companies generally don't make that transition. I think we both agree it's going to be hard for Intel, and they don't really need government's money. So we are not saying the government is giving them money. Who knows, it's all in flux, we'll know next week. But what I've read is they're planning to invest $50 billion in bringing semiconductor capacity manufacturing to the US. And TSMC said they're investing $100 billion in 3 years. So even in terms of capital, the competition is limited. And I think longer term, what will be very interesting is if China becomes independent and they become the suppliers, designers, and manufacturer of chips to the world, then they hold the power and the cards. And if US doesn't, you know, want to deal with them or there's security threat, then more the, you know, new businesses, tech focus will move from US to China and Asia, Europe region, whoever is willing to do business with them and get this higher technology, lower cost, et cetera. But that's a big if, you know, they've been trying for a long time. But if that happens, that will be world changing.
Yeah, they have shown before willingness to stay for the long run and also supply capital for the long run, mm-hmm. right? So in solar industry, for example, where it's much less, there are very advanced parts of the in the solar industry as well, but it's a lot about capacity and capex, right? Mm-hmm. China already kind of won that one. But this is a much more complex game. I'm not betting against them, but I'm certainly not betting for them in the very short run.
Yeah. This is very interesting discussion, Arne. Before we end, any implications for startups? I'm sure nothing for SaaS, but hardware startups probably.
For all hardware startups, supply chain is hard for hardware startups. Mm-hmm. And it clearly has implications, but there are also software that's designed for specific context from a hardware perspective, right? So say you're a game developer and you slotted a game for PS5, right? But there are no consoles out there. That is, now of course a lot of those titles are from large companies, but let's say you're a small gaming studio and you've been sponsored by Sony to bring a game to it, then that's an implication. And the same thing for software running on IoT devices or software running on machine learning platforms in clouds and so forth. So there are startup implications, maybe not as much as for the large companies, but there are timing issues depending if you're sensitive to whatever metal you're running on.
Yeah. Well, we wish all the startups best of luck in getting the supply among all the big companies competing for them, hardware startups. And we look forward to seeing what comes out of the summit that US government is holding. I think it's this week or next week. Yeah, very interesting space. I'm getting, since I've worked in the semiconductor space, I'm glad that it's getting some visibility and the importance it deserves. It's kind of always in the background. Nobody even knows. Yeah. Okay. Thanks everybody for listening to us banter on semiconductors. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Take care so long.
See you. Bye.